Blog Talk Radio.
Should I say afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a fantasy football dedicated episode of the CNC Football Factory. This is Carlos Sardinius. I'm joined by my co-host, CJ the Painkiller DeSimone. Together we form to become the dynamic duo known as
the CNC Football Factory.
And we're joined by a very special guest today, Asher Mulk, who is associated with the Apex Fantasy Leagues. Definitely go check them out. It's a great website. They have a lot of good content for reading. They also have a lot of drafts for fantasy football purposes that you can participate in. It's a great, great site. So without further ado, I want to bring in our guest, Asher. How's it going, man?
Hey, thanks for having me on. Doing well.
All right, the audience is very happy to have you on. So a lot of our fans and listeners are Jets fans. This is what we are. We're a Jets football kind of show. But one of my picks, it's just something that I love doing is playing fantasy football. I'm addicted to it. So I wanted to start off with a question that I think some of our Jets listeners would be interested in, and that's the impact of Geno Smith's jaw getting smashed, for lack of a better word, on the fantasy value of the key Jets players.
Well, I mean, it's a good question because coming out of West Virginia, Geno Smith was incredibly efficient in the spread offense. I remember when he was a senior, for a while he had more touchdown passes than incompletions, like the first three games. It was unbelievable. And he had a lot of potential being Chan Gailey's system, but I mean, with the jaw getting broken, Patrick shoved onto the scene. But I really, really don't think it has that much of an impact, only because Geno Smith was a little up and down anyway, and Fitzpatrick has so much experience in Chan Gailey's offense. I mean, I think he finished this, off the top of my head, QB 12th overall with Chan Gailey in Buffalo a few years ago. And Brandon Marshall, I mean, he doesn't have a strong arm, but Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker are not really guys who demand the ball 20 or more yards down the field. I mean, they're more run after the catch of guys in red zone threats. So I really think it, you could argue it's a plus because Fitzpatrick is proving he can at least manage a team and that he has command of Chan Gailey's offense before. Another one who I'm starting to really, really get high on is Chris Ivory. I mean, this is a guy who has at worst an average offensive line, with a coach who knows how, and this is most important, what I like about Chan Gailey, he's a coach who understands how to put his players in a position to win, in a position to maximize their talent. And look what T.J. Spiller did in, what was it, 2012, and he hasn't had a season like that since. I don't think it's rocket science, but apparently the guys in Buffalo, Marone and Hackett, didn't know how to use him, and Gailey has shown that he can really be a talent maximizer on his team, which I think is good news for Jets players and really minimizes the impact of Geno Smith's injury.
Yeah, I agree with you, Asher. I like Ivory's value. He's starting to kind of separate himself in the preseason as far as the premier lead back. There were some questions about who would really be getting the lion's share of carries. It's kind of looked like it's going to be Ivory. And the other thing I saw that I really liked on this last preseason game was him catching the ball at the backfield. Now, frankly, that probably has something to do with Fitzpatrick's noodle of an arm. But if you're a fantasy player, that especially if you play points per reception, that means you're getting points for Chris Ivory that you never did in the past. What do you think about that?
Well, no, absolutely. And the thing about Ivory is that you're not, his ADP is in the, I think, our 8th or 9th, average draft position for those unfamiliar with the term, is in the 8th or 9th round. And by then, I mean, all the real workhorses are gone. The guys who are going to catch a ton of passes because I mean, obviously, if you're taking a Forte, well, maybe not this year, Le'Veon Bell, or guys you know are going to catch 50, 60, 70 passes, those guys are gone. But if Ivory can increase his catch total from like 15 to even 30 or 35, it would move him up the ranks in fantasy football, you know, to where he's going, if he stays healthy, which granted has been a question for him in the past, he is going to outperform his ADP. I mean, Stephen Ridley has yet to show any reason to put him on the field. He's still recovering from his ACL tear. He was never dynamic in the first place. Bilal Powell has always only a third down back. I mean, that is also very clear. And Zach Stacy, I mean, they got him for what, a conditional sixth or seventh rounder. He's no threat right now. And the third preseason game will tell us a lot. But for now, I think Ivory, especially if he goes to your running back, which we can go over what that is in a little bit when you take up all the wide receivers early, he is a huge value as your second running back in the eighth or ninth round. I really like Ivory this year, especially if he has two cupcake games to start the year. So if you really don't like him that much, draft him and sell him high in the first 2 weeks.
Good strategy, man. Let me ask you a little bit before we move on to some other topics. What do you think about the Jets' defense in terms of defense and special teams rankings potentially for the year as it relates to fantasy football?
Right. I will begin this with a caveat that I don't consider myself as knowledgeable about defenses for fantasy football purposes. I do for like straight NFL purposes. But with that being said, for obviously Jets fans, they got Todd Bowles, who made gold from manure last year with a Cardinals defense. I live in Arizona, so I saw all this firsthand. I mean, they lost Dockett. Darryl Washington was suspended, who was incredible. Patrick Peterson was a shutdown corner for maybe a quarter of the season, maybe a quarter. And Matthew was still coming back from a severe injury. And somehow he found, now they may have given up a lot of yards, but he found a way to put consistent pressure on the opposing quarterback and take gambles and risks. And with Revis back, they're going to test Cromartie out on the other side. And with Sheldon Richardson, I think he's out for 4 games. And Wilkerson, but when Richardson gets back, I mean, this is a team that can push the pocket from the interior. If Quentin Cole doesn't take a step forward, they are going to be probably an above-average fantasy defense. And considering they get to face the Bills and Matt Castle two times a year, I'm not sure what the rest of the schedule is like, but they can definitely be an above-average fantasy football defense, especially in plus matchups. The only worry there is the safety position, but Darrell Revis shutting down one side of the field can really minimize the impact of a weakness like that. And if you can get your front seven to push the pocket like they do, and you have Revis, you know, you're not going to give up that many points. So they're definitely an above-average selection for fantasy football purposes.
What do you think about taking a chance on, say, a rookie like Leonard Williams, you know, playing fantasy football? Where do you think that he would rank?
So you just entered the world. So let me tell you.
Right.
CJ's doesn't play fantasy football. So there is a format that allows you to take specific defensive players. Most people don't play it, but there is a category known as IDP, which you actually do get to draft individual defensive positions.
Okay.
And that's a great question, actually, if we're talking IDP. I don't know, you know, we personally, you and me, Asher, haven't talked about IDP, but what are your thoughts about that?
Right. I don't play IDP, but I can tell you about what his position will tell you. First of all, if he plays defensive end on that line, I mean, unless you're J.J. Watt, you simply don't amass that many sacks in the 3-4. They're a 3-4 defense, aren't they?
They're going to be kind of mixing in both, I believe, because of the players they have and the lack of depth at the linebacker position. They may be a 3-4 by name, but they're really going to be 4-3 at least half the time, I would say.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, either way, if he plays a 3-4 end sometimes, that production won't be that great. But if he plays a 4-3 on the end, or he plays outside linebacker in the 3-4, he has a definite possibility for, you know, he could be a double-digit sack artist. He was a great all-around player at USC. I mean, he was in the conversation for the number one pick. And thank God my Tennessee Titans did not take him 2 overall, because I think I really wanted a franchise quarterback. But, if you're an end in those sorts of defenses, and with Bowles, who is a master creating deception on the defensive side of the football, with Richardson and with Wilkerson really demanding double teams, he could see a lot of one-on-one opportunities against tackles early in the season, which would be great for his fantasy value. I mean, I think he has to Quentin Coble's on one side, but he hasn't shown much. I think Leonard Williams is really going to get a chance to shine his rookie year.
All right, excellent. All right, so let's move a little bit off the Jets-related players, and I wanted to talk to you a little bit about just overall any trends you're seeing for what I would call overvalued players in the first, second rounds, people that are being taken early. We're going to talk PPR because that's kind of what I personally play a lot. Asher plays that as well. The draft strategy on a standard would be different, a little bit different. You wouldn't value wide receivers as much. But
right.
Who do you think? Let's go just first round. Who do you see being taken in the first round that you think is potentially overvalued at this point? Any position?
I got two for you. I have seen Matt Forte and go in the first round, and Matt Forte last year was incredible, but you know, you got to be aware of two things. Is one, they lost Mark Trestman, who has a huge history of throwing to his running backs, as a lot of you guys know. I mean, Forte, even Larry Centers had over 100 catches with Trestman, and now they bring in Adam Gase, I believe, who ran the Broncos offense last year, and he threw the ball to C.J. Anderson a bit, but he's not going to feed him 120 targets like Forte got last year. So he's a lock to have his receptions go down by as much as 50. And also, the other scary thing is this is the year Forte turns 30. And as you can look on our website, apexfantasyleagues.com, or you can just search Apex Fantasy League's running back drop-off age. We wrote an article about this, I think, last year. I think I wrote an article about how 30 is like this whole watershed event for running backs in that their production drops significantly. In fact, I think when the running back has a 1,000-yard season, when he's 30 or older, it's only happened once or twice that he's ever repeated it. And Matt Forte is on that cliff right now. So I'm kind of buyer beware on that. And we have this kind of revisionist history of him being a guy who's always been healthy, but that hasn't always been the case. And
yeah, I definitely agree with you there on his health. And the past couple of years, he's stayed healthy, but prior to that, he'd get hurt quite often.
Yeah, he had two seasons. I mean, he broke his fibula, and I mean, he's good when he's on the field, but I just don't see him as a first-round value. I mean, I would take C.J. Anderson over him 10 out of 10 times. And also, I'm a little wary of Adrian Peterson going first, and that's for two similar reasons. One, we don't know he's going to catch passes. We don't know he's going to be the third down back. And two, the age 30 cliff. Now, with Adrian Peterson, he is a superior human being physically to anyone I've probably ever seen before, so I'm not as worried with him. But as far as receptions go, I don't see how you can take him over Le'Veon, even if Le'Veon Bell suspended for one game. I mean, that's one game out of the season. And that's so, so overblown to have. Maybe, okay, so you play Danny Woodhead and hope for a big game on your wide receivers for one game, but then you have a guy who's going to be on the field for 80% of his team snaps, and he's going to catch 80 passes again. And he looked incredible last year. He said he's even more explosive this year. And on Apex, his ADP is either one or two overall. Over Le'Veon Bell, I think, and I don't see how you can take him over Le'Veon, and you can make an argument Charles and Eddie Lacy are over Adrian Peterson as well, in my opinion. So those are two guys in the first, and I think are a bit overvalued.
All right, my friend, that's a hot take. I just got to tell you, that's a hot take. That's probably the first time I've really heard that so far.
All right.
I listen to Peterson, lock number one, number two. So I like that you have a different perspective on that. So I got running. What about players like DeMarco Murray and Shady McCoy? You know, players like that where last year had fairly decent seasons and so on and so forth. What would probably be the caveat for players to kind of not exactly draft them in the first round, but maybe see if they could get them, you know, for a steal in the later rounds?
Yeah, DeMarco Murray, I'm very comfortable with taking in the second round. I mean, Chip Kelly has shown that he is like Chingele, a talent maximizer, a player in a position to win. I mean, I went to University of Arizona. I saw Nick Foles. He was good, but he wasn't 27 touchdowns, two interceptions good. I mean, he made Mark Sanchez a passable starting quarterback. You see, that can't be over. As Jets fans, you probably couldn't believe your eyes last year when you saw that happening. And you guys have to comment on that one.
We should have kept Sanchez. Look how great he's doing. It's the system.
That is absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. And even Sanchez thrived in that. And Murray, if you look at the Pro Football Focus run block ratings, I think Philadelphia was in first at like 88, and the Cowboys were in second all the way down at like 54. So that's the point. So the Eagles are going to open holes, and he's not going to see 400 and something, 492 touches or something. He's not going to see that again. That's unreasonable to expect. But with the guy who with 15 carries a game can get you 100 yards and a touchdown or two, with pass catching acumen, is going to be a great pick. Too much because you can lock up with Ryan Matthews because there's a bit of injury history, and you can handcuff him there because Matthews is capable of being a good running back himself. And McCoy, DeMarco Murray, I'm comfortable picking in the second round, probably not in the first. McCoy, I'm not comfortable taking him probably until the late third or fourth round, even though his ADP is in the late second. I mean, I saw some alarming things last year. First of all, he still had his, give me one second, I gotta switch to my phone because I'm getting out of my car. You guys still there?
Yeah, no, we're here. So, I mean, for one thing, you're talking about McCoy, and I was, last year, he was east to west, not north to south, and yeah, I know for a few weeks he had injuries on the offensive line, but he just did not produce, and it, like you said, they were still the number one offensive line, including those injuries in the first 6 weeks.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. He didn't really miss any time with injury, and he wasn't beating people to the edge as he was last year, which is really concerning for his value because, I mean, besides for his lateral agility, he doesn't have that much long speed. So if he wasn't beating people to the edge with the best offensive line in the NFL, with the threat of Macklin and Jordan Matthews there, how is he going to survive in Buffalo with no quarterback, with a coach and an offensive offensive system that doesn't suit him as nearly well? I mean, he goes from one of the best situations to the worst. I don't see how. I mean, when you take LeSean McCoy, you're arguing that he is going to get carries. That's it.
Right.
That's all you're hoping for. And that's not enough for me to spend an early round pick on him.
And one of the worst offensive lines as opposed to one of the best offensive lines in football. I mean, it's like from number one to number 26 ranked from last year.
Yeah,
to this year.
And I just don't think that that's a good use of one of your top three round picks. Maybe in the fourth round if I really like my team so far, but he's a guy who I've almost scratched off my draft board completely, to be honest with you.
All right, so Asher, let's get to it. We've got about really 10 minutes before we're going to be wrapping up the show. We try to keep it a little bit short. Definitely know you have things to do today, drafts, et cetera, on apexfantasy.com. Give us some players that are being undervalued that you think will perform greater than their ADP this year that could potentially win people championships in the later rounds.
In the later rounds, there's a couple guys who I really
not like round 15 or something. Six, seven,
so,
round picks.
Second or seventh.
Oh, I said fifth, sixth, seventh. Something like that.
Oh, okay. So one guy I really like a lot is there's two guys. One guy is Allen Robinson. And Allen Robinson is being drafted. He's creeped up to the fourth round, but, I mean, he has all the check marks for a marquee wide receiver in this league. One, he has incredible college production. That is a direct correlation with NFL production. He was dominant at Penn State with bad quarterback play, which is, there are guys like Demaryius Thomas and Calvin Johnson who fit the bill on that. He is a Dez Bryant clone athletically. Same size, same measurables, everything. By all accounts, he's tearing up camp right now. He was on pace for, almost 70 catches for almost 1,000 yards and 6-7 touchdowns as a rookie last year with a rookie quarterback. And if he's going to see 140 targets this year, I think his floor this year is
DeAndre Hopkins last year. So 75 catches, 1,100 yards, and 6 or 7 touchdowns. And in the fourth round as your third or fifth round as your third or even fourth wide receiver, I mean, he is going to be, I think, really, really special. And he's a guy who I'm targeting everywhere in the fifth or sixth round if he can fall there. Another guy I actually really like is a little bit of a post-type guy who was let people down last year is Kendall Wright. He still plays a high he's going to get a lot of targets in an offense that's not going to be that good, but the defense won't be that good either, so he's going to see plenty of garbage time stuff. I mean, Mariota is an upgrade over anyone that my Titans had last year, and Dorial Green-Beckham is incredibly raw. Justin Hunter, who knows? I mean, he was a complete flop last year. He was a huge disappointment. Delanie Walker's okay, but other than that, that passing game is going to funnel through Kendall Wright, and there has to be some regression to the mean last year. What I mean by that is they were so bad and so inefficient that they could only go up from where they were last year. So Kendall Wright, even in the eighth round, especially if you go running back heavy early in a PPR league and you have Kendall Wright as your third or fourth wide receiver, then I think he can really keep you afloat at that position and be have production similar to guys who go into the fifth or sixth round.
All right, Asher. All right, so a couple different questions, specific players I wanted to ask you about. First of all, the one biggest enigma, especially in a PPR league, is if you're drafting the first round or, you know, late in the first, early second, maybe even mid first round, is what to make of Odell Beckham and his season last year and how that can possibly translate to this season. Can it be duplicated or do you think he's going to be overdrafted this year? Hey, I haven't actually got to that question yet before you answer that.
Yeah. In one of my leagues. Did you want to answer that? Sorry.
Yeah. How much of a hit do fantasy owners take with Kelvin Benjamin possibly being out for the year with the torn ACL?
With Benjamin, So players who are already drafted already, a lot of them took Kelvin Benjamin with their fourth, even or like third pick, like in the third round or in the fourth round, and that is killer to your fantasy team. So now you have to really count on to be competitive. You have to count on one of your guys who drafted in the sixth, seventh, eighth round stepping up, and one of the guys in the later rounds to replace the guy that you drafted in the sixth, seventh, or eighth round who's replacing Kelvin Benjamin. I mean, it is a huge disadvantage. I mean, imagine just wiping out your third or fourth best player right away without having one game played yet. I mean, it is a huge disadvantage for sure. And as far as Odell Beckham goes, I am a huge proponent of Odell Beckham. So similar to Allen Robinson, well, he's smaller than Allen Robinson, which a lot of people don't like because big wide receivers score the most points. But his athleticism, he tested incredibly well at the combine. He had good college production. And most of all, I mean, he was uncoverable last year. And it's a mistake to expect him to do the same thing this year. I think that's what a lot of people are assuming, that he's going to, you know, have 9 catches for 120 yards and 3 scores every game. That's not what you're expecting when you're drafting him. The great thing about drafting Odell Beckham is he could regress he could be only 70% as efficient and still be the best wide receiver in fantasy football. That's what's awesome about Odell Beckham. Now, his hamstrings are a little bit worrisome, but even if he does regress by as much as 30%, he is going to contend with someone like Antonio Brown or Dez Bryant or Maurice Thomas to be the top wide receiver. And I mean, I've seen videos from camp. He's uncoverable. The man is a breathtaking athlete. It's like a Antonio Brown, Deshaun Jackson hybrid. And on a guy that's going to see 140, 150 targets on a good offense with a great coordinator, Ben McAdoo, ex-Packers offensive coordinator. You can make an argument that behind Antonio Brown, he should be the second wide receiver drafted. I would probably put him behind I'd probably put him behind it. My order is Antonio Brown, Julio, Dez, Demaryius, and then Odell. But if you took Odell third out of those guys, I'd have a hard time arguing with you because his ceiling is still incredibly high. And even if he regresses a significant amount, you can't bank on last year's stats because that's almost unrepeatable. But even if he regresses, he's going to be an every week elite difference maker.
Excellent. All right. That makes me feel better. I picked him kind of late in the first round of a draft I did a little bit earlier.
No, that's perfect. That's perfect. That's exactly where you should go.
I got him later than you would normally expect, so I kind of had to take him. All right, real quick, a couple different positions I want to address with you. We've got about 5 minutes here on our timer. So tight end position, outside of Gronkowski, what are you seeing there? Should you just wait until the end pick a tight end. It's kind of a mess this year, isn't it?
It's kind of a mess almost every year. I'll throw out a couple guys who I like. Obviously, with the Kelvin Benjamin injury, Greg Olsen is going to be heavily targeted, again, even more so than he, as much as he was last year, which will make him the value. Jimmy Graham, if you're in a standard league, is going to be a very good pick. He can catch touchdowns, but he's not going to catch 80 passes anymore. I mean, that's not going to be who he is. If he caught 70, I think that's around right, around correct, maybe a little less. So I'm not a huge fan of Jimmy Graham until the fourth round. Travis Kelce, I really, really like. I mean, he's almost a Gronk clone. Now, he's not going to be as good, obviously, because no one, Gronk's arguably the best tight end of all time already. And I like him. Two other guys I'm going to throw at you are Jason Witten is perennially, you know, he's good. He's good for 65 catches for 800 yards and a couple scores. And Tyler Eifert could really see the second-year tight end on the Bengals, could be second in that team in targets, which on a Hugh Jackson offense is going to be a significant fantasy contributor. I kind of like the strategy of taking someone who you can count on for four games, maybe Delanie Walker, someone like that, and then getting Gates in one of the later rounds, because then you're going to have a guy who was second in the position or second or third overall last year who's going to have the exact same role, and you weather the storm for four games, and then you have a guy who you got in the 15th, 16th round, a guy who's going to be a top five tight end almost every week. So those are some tight ends I really like and some strategies I like.
All right. Final question related to quarterbacks. It's the only position we haven't really touched too much.
Right.
I think for the most part, we could see the top of the pecking order is the top of the pecking order at the end of last season. Andrew Luck, Rodgers. I think Breeze kind of takes a step back, and so does Manning, but you got Wilson out there. Specifically on Tom Brady, with his suspension looming, what do you think about, you know, taking Brady? Is that a good idea? Is he going lower than he should be, according to what you've been seeing?
Brady, from what I've seen, is going like the 9th or 10th round. So remember, there's always the pot. I mean, Brady is probably right after Peyton Manning in terms of fantasy quarterback. If we're ranking him, he's spending the full season. So he's at decent value, and there's always a possibility he doesn't get suspended at all. I mean, I'm not putting that at the forefront of my mind because in all likelihood, I think that it will get upheld, but I guess we'll see about that. And again, quarterback points are the most replaceable points. That is why I don't remember the last time I've taken a quarterback before the 9th or 10th round of a fantasy football draft, unless it's a QQB draft. Two guys, I believe it was CD Denny Carter, who writes for Fake Football, and he's also on fantasy football draft consultants. He took a quarterback from the waiver wire every single week last year. Every week he picked up a new quarterback or repeated the one from last week, didn't draft a quarterback, and their combined point output was more than Matt Ryan's total. So as far as Tom Brady goes, I think in the 9th or 10th round, you can take him and start him the last 12 games of the year if he's suspended, and you can just, again, weather the storm for the first four games, pick up Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's going to have a great first 2 weeks, probably because of the defenses he plays, and even guys like Bridgewater or Dalton. I mean, Dalton was the 4th or 5th best fantasy quarterback 2 years ago. Not that he's a great quarterback per se, but he's going to put up stats. So I think if you can get Tom Brady late and weather the storm for four games, like with Antonio Gates, I think that's a fine value.
All right, Asher, we've only got real quick, give everyone your contact information out there that's listening. We've got about a minute left. You're going to take us home, buddy.
Sure, sounds good. For those who don't know me, Asher Molk. I'm the co-owner of ApexFantasyFootballLeagues.com. We do blog on our site where me and Mike Brody, who's an awesome, awesome, knowledgeable author and one of my best friends, also writes. We've also done some work for RotoViz, more Mike than I. If you guys are interested in year-long fantasy football leagues, we have 6 different draft points. We have incredibly high payouts. We do PPR with a flex. We do blind bidding for free agents, so there's some strategy instead of just the waiver wire, right? And the best part about our leagues is you play 2 games per week. And what that means is you play a head-to-head opponent, and you also play the league average every week. So gone are those weeks where you score the second most points, and you're unlucky to play the person who scored the most points. And your friend who scored the 10th most points play the person who scored the least, and you get a loss and they get a win. Doesn't make any sense. We remedy that problem by doing 2 games per week, And we believe we are the most skill-based format online. So we have drafts running every single day, sometimes multiple per day from here on out. So if you guys are interested in playing fantasy football for money, sign up in New York, and please email us at apexfantasyfootballleagues.com at gmail.com, or find us on Twitter at Asher Mulk, at Mike Brody, and we will be more than happy to answer your questions. Carlos, thank you so much for having me on. I had a great time, man.
All right, Asher. Thank you so much for taking the time. Good luck today with all those drafts.
Okay. Thanks so much, Carlos. Have a good one.
All right. And for everyone else listening out there, if you could still hear the sound of my voice, because I'm not entirely sure, this is Carlos.
Hey, CJ.
Trying to get the heck out of here. Stay tuned. We're going to be popping our podcast on SoundCloud next.